It's finally getting cold in Tucson. I think the low was 48 last night. I know, right? 48 degrees. Man, we definitely suffer here in the desert. But it's November, and this month we are going to discuss MRI in the emergency department. And before you say it, yes, we have done this already. But we have a new motivation to do so. We here in Arizona have a brand new set of guidelines to help us determine the appropriateness of MRI in the emergency department. Now, we're fortunate to have some cutting-edge MRI utility for all kinds of modalities. One-bang MRIs, PE studies that also evaluate for DVT, and abdominal MRIs to evaluate for appendicitis and torsion and gallbladder all at the same time. It's incredible stuff, but it's certainly outside of the norm. So this led us to discuss what is an appropriate use of an MRI. What can it be used for? What should it be used for? And where are we headed with MRI as an ED imaging modality? Is this better care? Is it worse care? Does it help us empty out the hospital, or does it constipate the ED? And this led to a further discussion that we'll do next month on advanced imaging in general and how people in the emergency department deal with clinical uncertainty. So pros, cons, and all the gray areas in between, let's get into it. And for those of you that are new listeners, I'm going to give you a quick tutorial for how to use this podcast. When you hear the bell ding, that means that you should look on your device to see what paper we're referencing to back up what we're saying. But if you hear the turkey gobble, that's just our opinion, and you can decide whether or not you want to take it or leave it. All right, so it is November. It is interview season, which is the time every year when we convince everybody that Tucson is nicer than the rest of the world. And we had a recent staff meeting, which has prompted us to rehash something we just did not that long ago. Brian, have you seen this yet?
I was brought to me when I was in Army ordering MRIs from triage, and Lisa brought it to me. So I found it quite interesting.
Did she bring it to you with like a gift card or something?
No, she just said
she probably kicked you in the nuts. You outperformed Lisa on the I hate MRI score.
Outperformed or underperformed?
So to give you an idea of what we're looking at right here, we have as part of a QI project to see what we're doing with MRIs. And for those of you that don't work here at Banner University or South, we have 24-hour access to MRI, and we actually have some really impressive times that we can get back MRIs of all kinds of things. So we can get an MRI chest, an MRI abdomen and pelvis. We can do a lot of stuff very quickly because it's set up that way, and we have enough machines. But it's still an MRI. Still takes a while. Still a little difficult to try to get stuff together. So we had this piece of paper, which the hilarious thing about it is I guarantee you, if you would have just asked me to draw this graph of how many MRIs are ordered by each one of us attendings, I'm pretty sure I could draw it like with pretty good accuracy.
Yeah.
So based on that, we wanted to talk about MRI in the ED because it is something that is progressing. It's something that we're doing a lot more of. There's pros and cons, and there's proponents, and there's people that are against it. So we've got a few people that have variable opinions. So it's myself, Dr. Jared Mosier, Dr. Chris Williams, and Dr. Low End of the Totem Pole, Brian Drummond. Brian, you were far and away the least MRI ordered doctor of all of us.
I think what you're saying is I'm a deviant.
You are a two standard deviation deviant.
I'm a super deviant.
So this is something that is become available. And the thing that I think that's interesting about MRIs in the emergency department is that we used to be at a point where a CT in the emergency department was also considered a luxury. Do you remember when Cells first got their CT scanner?
Yes.
Yeah. So it was unbelievable to me that like an emergency department would not have a CT scanner. And I wonder if at some point we are going to be in that same position where, what do you mean you're an emergency department that doesn't have an MRI machine?
24/7.
24/7, and someone who is, you know, quickly able to read and interpret it. So there are certainly pluses to MRI. There are there's the lack of radiation. You definitely get a lot more detail. You can see things on MRI that you can't see on CT that you can't pick up. You have strokes, you have MRCP, you have itty-bitty tiny tumors that are something I would want to know about, but you also pick up itty-bitty tiny tumors that I don't want to know about.
And that may actually be the problem that I think when people approach diagnostics, you can approach it, you know, like a hunter where you're specifically targeting a diagnosis versus a fisherman who just casts a net and hopes you catch something. An MRI is definitely a net. And if your patient's coming in with a specific complaint and you have a specific thing you're looking for, it may not be the best tool for that.
All right. So this was the Tucson Emergency Department MRI protocol as sent out to us. So number one, MRI should not be ordered for patients referred to the ED for non-emergent conditions. So if you roll your ankle and you want to know if you tore a ligament and you say, but an MRI will give me that answer, would you all agree that someone can wait for their outpatient ankle MRI? Is there any disagreement with that?
No. I'm done. I just want to say, I am the highest MRI user out of our little boy band here, but I don't think I've seen 100 patients this year.
I was actually thinking that exact same thing. I said, well, Jared's stats are skewed. It's like five people, you know.
How do you order a tenth of an MRI? You order it and cancel it? Does it still count?
And to be fair, I think the same could be said for some of the PEDS attendings on there. It's just a different population.
It's very much. Like, I'm certain... I fall pretty much smack in the mean. Actually, no, I'm almost one standard deviation low. I don't know if that makes me a good doctor.
On the PEDS mean, though, you're probably right on.
So to order an MRI in the PEDS ED takes a little more doing, but for some of the things that we'll talk about, it makes more sense. We're trying to decrease the amount of radiation that's out there. So I don't know if that makes me a good doctor or a bad doctor, but for the volume of patients I see, I don't order as many MRIs, because I see a high volume, but if I saw less, I don't know if it would skew it.
Yeah, we got to frame the context of this conversation a little bit. And we talked about this, what was it, last year that we did the MRI thing? We looked at that graph of radiology imaging over time. The assumption being that if you're going to increase your MRI usage, you're going to decrease your usage of your other modalities. But what that graph showed was that's not true.
Absolutely.
So what we're doing is we're trying to get these other modalities in hopes that we don't have to get the MRI because it's inconveniently long and expensive and whatnot. And we end up just using them as screening tests to screen for which ones need the MRI. So that also turned out to be the case. I was moderating a research session on diagnostics at ASEP last week, and there was one, I think it was from Ohio State, that they looked at MRI usage or CT and ultrasound usage versus ultrasound alone for pediatric abdominal pain. And it was like, if you went to a PEDS ED, you got more ultrasound alone. If you went to a adult ED, you got more CT alone and ultrasound versus CT. So the context of this conversation is, what are you using your imaging modality for? If you have somebody that comes in with, I don't know, here's a good one, ovarian torsion, right? And you say, well, let's get the ultrasound. Well, I didn't really show anything. Let's get the CT. Well, let's get the MRI. And now they're there for 16 hours, mm-hmm. as opposed to saying, maybe you just need to go straight to the MRI. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that's what you should do, but I'm saying that's the context of the conversation. So this graph doesn't show us that.
So this brings us to the second thing, the second point of our MRI protocol. MRIs should be performed during inpatient stay for patients who will be admitted. Any disagreements with that one?
So
it brings up an interesting discussion.
Yeah, I think from a neurologic standpoint, you have one article, and I don't remember which one it is, that actually shows that while maybe the ED length of stay increases a bit, maybe an hour or two, at the most 2 hours, hospital length of stay decreases by 12 to 24 hours, and MRIs are not being ordered inpatient when they've already been done in the ED, obviously, and so it's not like the patient's getting double tested. So I think when you're admitting a patient for a neurologic complaint, that may not apply.
It's really the case for everything, right? Because if once they get admitted and you get an inpatient, then you got to wait 3-4 days for it because they got to slog through the backlog of ED studies and whatnot. But in that research form, there was an abstract where they looked at patients who got admitted to the hospital for an ob stay for their TIA workup and their MRIs versus an ED-based obs unit. And it turns out that it took like 12 hours longer for the inpatient people to get their MRI. So, you know, we live in this very ED-centric world where we just care about our throughput, but the inpatient bone's connected to the ED bone, and if you're going to admit all these people, that's going to back up. That's going to back up the ED.
The inpatient bone is connected to the ED bone, but what happens on the ED side will reverberate through the entire inpatient unit. So if you've got patients that are all in the ED that are getting MRIs, yeah, they'll go home. And is that better for the patient? It might be, rather than having to stay in the hospital. Is it better for the rest of the system? Let's say one of your inpatients needs to get an MRI. Well, the ED MRIs are prioritized over inpatient MRIs. That may be why it takes 12 hours to get one, is because all of these things that maybe should be done inpatient are being done in the ED instead. And then as we are waiting for patients to go through with MRI, we keep getting backed up further and further and further until suddenly there's a release and you get five patients that go up at once and then five more patients come in. I don't know if you guys ever waited tables. Did you guys ever wait tables?
Yeah, I did.
So if you get sat with four tables and then you give them all their check at the same time, they leave, you get sat for four more tables and then they leave, it just keeps going over and over, and that back and forth whiplash reverberates through the rest of your night. And certainly in the ED, it's the same. It reverberates through the rest of the hospital. Then I'm not going to call you with one admission every hour. I'm going to call you with five. And then a few hours later, I'm going to call you with another six, because that's how my workflow is going.
Yeah, but if all of those admissions you're calling are for, oh, I only need to admit this patient because they need an MRI, that's going to be a 12-hour wait each individual time versus a one-hour wait, slow throughput through the emergency department, but then they don't need to come in, and the only patients that are being admitted are the ones that have other needs.
Yeah, and 2 points about that. One is, why do you think that the consultants aren't wanting to admit patients until they get the MRI? Because they need the MRI to make the diagnostic decision or the therapeutic decision. And if it's going to take them 3 days to get it, of course they're going to want them to get it before they get admitted. That's why they're not just being jerks about it. No, number two...
Brian, you want to jump in while he thinks of his number two?
Sure. So I think the point of this point of the protocol is that an admission should not be delayed for an MRI. The point is really, okay, if you're going to admit this patient anyway, admit them. I'm fine if you're going to come down and write admission orders and start that process going. We can order the MRI in the ER, and if it happens in the ED while they're waiting, great. But we're not doing a very stepwise approach. I think that's really the goal, to say, okay, yes, we know they're going to get admitted, but we're not going to write admission orders. They're going to sit in the ER until the MRI is done, then they're going to get admitted.
That I wholeheartedly agree
with. Yeah, I agree with that too. Okay.
And you see that a lot with surgery. It's increasing the number of MRCPs that are being ordered when we both know very well that the patient's still going to be admitted regardless. And I understand at South Campus why that may be an issue, because for those that don't know, we don't have interventional GI like at the beck and call over there. And so if they do need an ERCP, they need to be transferred. So that is a little bit of a disposition changer there, but not at main campus. And the number of MRCPs that are being requested at main campus, I think, is getting a little bit out of hand, especially when it doesn't change the disposition, but they're refusing to allow the admission until that's done. And then that gets back to that initial point there, where, you know, does that test actually affect the probability or pretest probability of the disease? And I would also add the disposition. And in that case, it doesn't affect disposition. And if everyone's in agreement that an MR needs to be done, yes, we understand it's going to happen faster through the emergency department. Go ahead and put your orders in. Get that patient a bed ready to go. We'll get the ED MR ordered. And that won't slow anything down. So that's why I think that's a really important take-home point.
Yeah, I agree with that. The second point I was going to make was that we're kind of making it sound like we are just ordering MRIs on everybody and admitting all these patients and indiscriminately ordering MRIs. And the one thing I would bring up is that we don't know that that's true.
I think overall our rate is high, though. My understanding is our ED rate is one of the highest in the
country. Second in the country is the stat that's been bandied.
But I agree, we're not. It's not every patient. I don't think we're doing
that. But we also don't know that, even though that we're the second highest users, are we indiscriminately ordering MRIs? We don't know the answer to that.
Well, I guess, how would you answer that question? Would you answer the question of indiscriminately ordering, would it be based on positive findings, or would it be based on pretest probability and what they presented with, and whether that decision to order it was appropriate based on those symptoms?
So, sure, both, plus utilization of other imaging modalities.
So indiscriminate is probably not the right word to use, because my practice is different from Jared's practice, which is different from Chris's, which is different from Brian's. And indiscriminate is saying that my practice is inferior in some way, or that I'm not doing what I'm supposed to. What I will say is that when you introduce an MRI and it's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it is used far more frequently. And that's backed up by literature that says that just by putting this modality there, you're going to use it a lot more. Now, is that good or bad? That remains to be seen, but that depends on your endpoint. And so we've discussed this a little bit, that the endpoint might be, for some of us, throughput through the ED. For me, I'm trying to see as many children as possible in the PEDS ED, and if I have five MRIs that are waiting, that slows me down considerably from seeing patients that might be mistriaged, that might be, you know, patients I could get in and out quickly, where usually a lot of my job in the ED is to provide reassurance. On the other hand, your endpoint may be whether or not you pick up every single critical case. For some people, it's whether or not the insurance is going to reimburse you for this many ED MRIs, because our indication is, well, we can do it. It's convenient. We made these MRIs of the abdomen super fast. We can get them done in about 8 minutes, and it takes a little longer to get that all arranged, but the actual scan is fantastic, and it's very high yield. It tells us a lot, but is it actually something we can say is standard of care, or is it just standard of care for our shop?
Yeah, by indiscriminate, I mean, I don't mean that to be demeaning in any way.
I know what you said.
I'm going to double down on it, but I don't mean for it to be demeaning. What I mean for it is, did you order it in somebody that didn't need it, or could you have gotten this, or are you getting X-ray, CT, MRI, because you have to have an answer, not because the patient needed it? You know, the cost thing, you brought up cost. Cost is an important one. I mean, my wife had an ovarian torsion a couple years ago, and she got a belly MRI because the ultrasound was negative, CT was negative, so we get an MRI, she had a torsion. It's $5,000, you know, and we're in the days where there's a lot more people paying out of pocket. That's crippling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's real money. I mean, even us, I mean, I have a health savings account, and there's no coverage for MRI. It's right out of my deductions or something. And then you can say, well, a lot of people don't pay anyway, so it doesn't matter. You're like, well, the whole system pays. Eventually, someone's going to pay for these, and that the payment is a hard thing to swallow. I mean, even for those of us in this room who couldn't afford it, but to say that, wow, do I really need that? I don't know. Do I? Yeah, maybe how sick am I, or how is it? But and you're willing to pay. But it is. Cost is a real factor in this.
So I'd like to comment on one more thing that's on this protocol before we talk about the individual studies that we can do. So if after an imaging modality, medical imaging recommends an MRI, the radiologist will indicate emergently or non-emergently. So, before we start this discussion, I'm asking one of our radiologists to peer review this episode.
Good.
Speak freely, gentlemen. No. you know, this is something that is difficult. Is I see stuff like, you know, this may be cancer, recommend MRI. Or this may be Crohn's disease, recommend MRI. Well, for some of these things, it's, you may have a hip fracture, recommend MRI. My patient's walking, it's not a hip fracture. I'm okay with that.
That's because they forgot to put correlate clinically. If they never did, I wouldn't do a physical exam on anybody.
So, and it's also because we put on the chief complaint for why we're getting the MRI present. Patient NED.
Yeah.
Chief complaint is here. So the difference being, if it's Crohn's disease, recommend MRI. Well, I'm not going to do anything about your Crohn's disease because you're not a sick enough patient to come in. If it's possibly cancer, if it's this may be a stroke, if it's something that I'm going to do something about, then yes, absolutely. So what this implies is not ED, you're doing a sucky job of describing the patient to me, or radiology, you're telling me to correlate clinically. What do you think I do here all day? It's a better communication. I need to call them. They need to call me. We need to have a discussion about this. And when that happens, things go well. When you want something to happen right away, you go find your nurse face-to-face. You don't leave them a passive-aggressive order. Nurse, please check vital signs Q5 minutes, you know, punitively. It's you go talk to people face-to-face. You have good communication skills with them. And you can tell them, here's what I'm looking for. And as opposed to just fishing and saying abdominal pain, MRI, and then, well, let's see what radiology can find. I don't know if you guys know this. There's a lot of stuff in the abdomen, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong with each and every one of those. So I feel bad for radiologists sometimes when I'm like,
oh, absolutely.
When I call them and they go, what are you looking for? Honestly, I have no idea, but I know it's not good.
And that means something to them, though.
I struggle with the correlate clinically thing because in my mind, it's like when you call IT and they ask if you restarted your computer. It's like, yes, I've done those things. But it's our fault because we don't tell them what we're looking for. We just say CT, abdomen, pelvis, right. go find Waldo.
And you know what? You know why IT does that? Because there's a large contingency. I used to work with IT in a former life. There's a lot of people that haven't tried that. And there are a lot of people, physicians, ordering tests that haven't seen the patient, particularly in the outpatient world.
Yeah, that's my point. We don't give them information to go looking for something. But we, the point I was trying to make is that we ask radiology to answer a question for us. Right, this patient has abdominal pain. Can you tell us why? Mm-hmm. And when they say, I can't really tell why off this CT, but if you got an MRI, I could get a better look at it. Right, that's your job then to try to figure. You've asked them to answer a question, and if they can't answer it off the tool you've ordered, then you have to decide: do I order the next tool, or am I comfortable?
They're a consultant,
enough?
And just like all the consultants, I have never felt married to my consultant's recommendations. There are plenty of consultants out there who have recommended I do something. I say, well, thank you for your input. I'm not doing that. Radiology is just another consultant, and I appreciate their input.
Right. The best radiology read I've ever had, it was from a CT abdomen pelvis, and the read simply said, impending diarrhea.
Yes, I've had a few of them.
And I called the radiologist back. I go, how did you know? They got back here immediately, destroyed the room that they were in. That is some diagnostic acumen.
I'd be so annoyed if I was a radiologist.
So I'm kind of a closet radiologist in general, so I give that as my background. But with this non-emergent emergent thing, Lisa and I had talked about this because I was getting pissed off about every study had consider MRI. Think about MRI. MRI would be a better test. And I was like, what the beep? You know, this is ridiculous. And so because my test ordering machine, you're going to bleep my bleep. My test ordering machine residents went, I ordered the MRI because radiology said consider it, so I had to. And I was like, no, you don't have to. There's nothing. I said, so we need to get something different. And I think that's why, emergently, non-emergently, when do you need to order the MRI?
And they've been really good with that lately, by the way.
They've been
like the CT I had last night, they said non-emergent MRI.
Right.
And do you know why they're better about it?
Communication.
Yeah, but if you look at the world from the MRI's perspective, or from the radiologist's perspective, why wouldn't you want the best tool that you could have? It'd be like, we don't give the pathologist something and say, can you look at this? But you can only use this one objective on the microscope. Can't use the other ones.
No stains that don't fit with.
And the MR is the best tool. That's actually, I think we've glossed over that point. But on things that I didn't even consider, like cholecystitis, better than ultrasound. Obviously, we've been talking about torsion. I'd say in the past year or two, that's been a bit of a paradigm shift for us as well. Questionable on Crohn's disease, for example, where that's better. There's others in that article that Aaron will post and link.
Well, I think they're better, but we're not like, it's not like magnitudes better, right? The sensitivity is 95 instead of 91, right? The specificity is 4 points higher. This is not like 50% sensitive to 100% sensitive with these MRIs. So, you know, it's taking all these tests, and it's not, one is, you know, oh my gosh, it's so much better than the other one. These are subtle differences. Even the appendicitis one, I think you had mentioned, and MRI for appendicitis, CT or MRI, they're both in the 90s for sensitivity and specificity, no matter how you want to cut it. I do think, though, as Jared was saying, you have to tell the radiologists, they are a tool, Chris, and I agree, you tell them exactly what they're looking for. I think this person has left lower quadrant pain, concern about diverticulitis or abscess. That's what you should put in your CT thing, and not just abdominal pain, because if you give them a specific thing, and they can comment, but if I ask specifically for them to comment on something, they have to comment on it in their read, is my understanding. And I'll probably be peer-reviewed and say I'm full of Hogwarts or something.
All four of us are going to be peer-reviewed quite a bit after this, after radiology gets a hold of this, so thank you.
But the more information you give them, the better a read they can do.
Absolutely.
I mean, and so it just, to me, makes sense. You give them the most information, you be specific on what you're looking for, and sometimes I agree with Aaron. I will say, pain in the right lower quadrant, unclear exact etiology. Yeah. And I'll leave it at that because I don't know. They are so all over the place.
I guess I don't really mind the recommend MRI thing because I think you have a choice. You say, okay, I am worried about X, Y, or Z. I'm going to get the CT scan. And then the radiologist says, well, if you really want to know the answer, you need an MRI. I need an MRI to be able to tell you the answer, right? Then it's on you to say, well, I really need an answer, so I'm going to get the MRI. Or based on my physical exam and a negative CT scan, I'm pretty comfortable saying, let's do a repeat evaluation in 24 hours or something.
But that's you, Jared. That's you thinking. Not everyone thinks. I mean, they see, let's be honest, yeah. There are reflexive test orderers that just see something, and if they get even a hint that they're supposed to do something different, they're not going to go re-examine the patient after the CT. They get that CT read, click the next box. The next box.
And I don't believe for a minute that you're not going to order that MRI.
I don't always do it.
I don't know. I question. This graph says otherwise.
Again, I haven't even seen 100 patients.
No, I think he brings up a good point. It's, you know, we're ordering these tests. We have to have something we're looking for. I tell the residents all the time when they say, I want to order a CT. Oh, great. What are you looking for? I want to order a CBC. Great. What are you looking for? Tell me what you're looking for. Justify it to me, and I'll let you order it. That's fine. All I need you to do is tell me why you want to get it. And if it's because the patient has abdominal pain, that's not good enough.
You know, here's how you relate this to an emergency doctor. We've all seen patients coming and complaining of abdominal pain. Some come in and they're complaining of pain, and you can just tell they really aren't concerned at all about their belly pain. They don't think it's an emergency. They know it's just a little bit of gas pain, but they're here in your emergency department telling you that they're having an emergency, versus a super stoic guy or girl comes in and they are clearly like in severe distress. That person's legitimately having an emergency. And when a person comes in with that, with those variation in concern, their own concern for the disease, that drives us crazy because we're relying on the patients as our first line of kind of auto triage as to whether or not they're having an emergency. Well, that's what we're doing to our radiologists. We're saying, I'm worried about this person's lungs, so I got this CT, or I'm worried about this person's belly, so I got this CT or this MRI. And they know that there's some people that really aren't that worried, and there's some people that are really, really worried, and they're worried about a specific thing. So let's not be those patients to our radiologists.
Right. I like that.
That's really good. I would offer, it's not an algorithmic approach because you can't fit every patient into this, but when I approach a patient and I'm trying to rule out disease that's dangerous, I have some tiers to where I put them in. Are you someone I can rule out all badness with a history and physical? If not, are you a patient I can rule out with, you know, selected tests, laboratory tests, urine, blood, or are you a patient patient that I need advanced imaging on. And usually, I can't think of many patients that I go skip straight to advanced imaging and don't order any screening blood work or urine tests on. It just doesn't happen that much because in evaluating these patients, the screening blood work either makes me feel a little bit better in a patient I'm going to do advanced imaging on, or it makes me feel a little bit more concerned. It validates my initial gestalt for my history and physical. But I think that you go into every patient's room and you do your history and physical, you come up with your differential, and you try to put them into a, are you someone that I can rule out right away? Are you someone that maybe I should get some screening tests on to look for a diagnosis, not screening of like, well, let's see what comes up? Or are you someone that I need a targeted imaging, advanced imaging study on in order to figure out what's going on?
Do you end up then not ordering an imaging study right away? You wait until you get your labs back? Is that kind of your process of how you step up and then your flow is that way? Or is it just you classify them and then whatever classification you do based on that?
So if I go in and I say, you have something concerning for a disease that will need advanced imaging. Like, this is a sketchy story. You might have ovarian torsion. You know, I'm actually pretty concerned about that. You fit into someone who, you know, I worry about needing advanced imaging. And you order the advanced imaging, but I'm also getting some blood work and a urine test, and the urine comes back with greater than 150 of blood on somebody who doesn't have, not on their cycle. I go, oh, never mind. This is probably a kidney stone then. But man, my initial gestalt was that you were somebody that needed advanced imaging because I was worried about ovarian torsion. I was worried about...
So you've ordered the test initially or you don't?
I've ordered the test already.
And then you'd cancel it. Yeah. But you look at your labs based... Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I'll cancel it if I find a good answer.
Alternative answer, yeah.
But I don't think you can just... We're never going to get to the point of just, I've ordered the MRI on the patient that came in. We joked about when we made our new ED that we should just have a CT scanner that you climb through and it stabs you in the butt with a gram of ceftriaxone before you get triaged.
Hopefully,
you know?
Depo too.
And Depo. Depo is that's lofty.
Haldol.
Haldol as well.
Well, we'd be meeting all of our CMS markers now if we were able to just do that.
And 30 per kilo of saline, Jared, for everybody. So this is kind of the last part. The types of MRIs that may be done in the ED that we have said are ones that are justifiable. Just, you know, by order, they're probably justifiable. So MRI abdomen and pelvis for patients suspected of having a surgical emergency. MRI chest for pregnant patients or patients unable to receive contrast with a possible pulmonary embolism. MRI spine for patients suspected of having a neurosurgical emergency. MRI stroke and MRI abdomen and pelvis without contrast for patients who otherwise would get a CT scan and an ultrasound. And an acute MRI brain, the one bang MRI that gives you a quick look at ventricles for the cases of people that have ventriculoperitoneal shunts. So would anybody disagree that these are valid reasons to get an MRI in the ED?
I wouldn't. No. I liked them.
Yeah, I thought these were great. Are there any that should be on there that you, of your opinion, think that we should be ordering MRIs for these things instead? I think that's pretty well covered. The things that are in there are great.
It's at least the 95-99%.
Yeah.
I mean, then it's one-offs on
right.
other things. But that's, I mean, any policy or something correct. You want to get a 95-99%.
So I think that the options out there are great. What we probably need to do is make sure that we know what we're going after before we order the tests. The throughput for a CT scan is pretty good, and I hope people listening to this don't think we're just bashing MRI. We're actually bashing all of advanced imaging. Right, Brian?
Well, I think imaging's, again, another reason, because I'm a closet radiologist, I can't read an MRI, so I don't like MRIs as much. I will be quiet. quite honest, I can read a CT scan and tell what's going on. And I may not know the specific diagnosis, but I can pick up lymphadenopathy, I can pick up diverticulitis, I can pick up a perf, I can pick up an abscess, I can pick up the major PEs I want to see. So that helps me treat the patient faster and quicker when I order that study and get a result back. And so as the system backs up, and we all know this, it's not just getting the tests done, it's getting a read done, because I would guess that no one in this room reads MRIs and is a good, I think there's maybe one person in our department who's told me he reads MRIs, but...
If I can read it, it's bad.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things, like I don't feel comfortable where I could take a look at that MRI and make a decision on a patient, where I can, if I get a CT scan and I see a normal appendix, I feel comfortable sending that patient home before a radiologist read. I am okay with that, and I'll try to put a note in. My read was this. Tell the patient the radiologist hasn't read it. We don't see it. Do you want to go home? And that's a reasonable approach that I practice. Mm-hmm. So I think that...
Do you think we should learn how to read MRI?
I think it would be great to do. I think there's more intricacies with MRI. It's not as It's not as intuitive. And maybe I'm not a radiologist, but I, you know, when I did do, you know, like reading and trying to learn MRI, it still took time. I can read an MRI of the knee, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, cause, like CT, it's either there, or it's not there, right? With MRI, it's like which sequence do you see it in?
Right, and so in the phase, you know, and so it's harder to pick up, especially because some of these things we're looking at are subtle. Right, it's a subtle change. It's not a big obvious. Whereas you do a CT of the brain, oh, there's a bleed or there's not a bleed. Those are pretty. Most of us can pick up bleeds, yes or no, on probably 9 out of 10.
So I would encourage everybody to do as Brian does, to say, what decision would I make based on my read of this study? Now, if your attending says, great, that chest X-ray looks good to you, awesome, send them home. That's fine. If the attending says, I want the radiologist read of that chest X-ray. Great. Let them do that. But think to yourself, what would I do based on my read of this imaging? What would I do based on this X-ray read, based on my view of this X-ray, my view of this CAT scan of the head, of the C-spine, of the abdomen, pelvis? Because there are plenty of these that I'll take a look through, and especially CT heads now, if it's not a huge Goomba, I'm pretty certain that we're heading in the direction where not everybody needs to be admitted. We're not quite there yet, so I don't put that much stock into it of just send them out if I don't see anything on a quick purview. But we're getting pretty good at it. And so I would encourage everybody to scan through your images and try to figure it out, because you may go places where radiology is not going to be reading your films at all, or at least not in the middle of the night. And you can also increase your... the amount of patients that you can see and your patient satisfaction and their wait times by making some decisions based off of what you see. I try to do that on things that I feel are pretty slam dunks. That's not a fractured ankle. You can go home.
And to be honest, radiologists are not 100% sensitive or specific. I have called radiologists multiple times.
Radiologists can be quite sensitive, actually.
They can be sensitive, but only over the phone, right? So they can miss stuff too, like any of us can miss stuff. And so when two people look at it, you look at it from the ER with your clinical feel, and then you call the radiologist and they put a negative read, and you're like, wait a sec, I'm concerned on these views. And I've had them change views or change reads. And to be honest, where we work, the first read is a residence read. Guess what they are? In training, right? So they're not as good as the radiologist. How many radiology overreads do we get in the morning? We get a bunch. A month ago, I had an appendicitis that I called and I said, I think this is appendicitis and there's inflammatory changes. This is the appendix. Twice the resident told me, no, that's not an appendicitis. This is something else. I said, pretty sure it's an appendicitis. I'll go push on them again. And then they changed their read and called their attending. So I think it's a good practice for that too. You get multiple people, when we talk about communication, looking at the same study, clinically offering what you feel. And as a resident in training, how do you learn this stuff? stuff, you know, you see something on that read, Aaron, that you're looking through, call the radiologist. We now have the phone number with the radiologist. Call them. Hey, I was looking at this. I saw this. How do you guys approach a read on such and such? And get their views so that you know, because that's how I learned what the measurements are for certain things. And you can learn that. They are happy to teach you. If you say you're interested in an x-ray or CT scan, right, they get to talk to somebody. They're in a dark room. They want to talk to somebody. So you're offering them an out. So I think that's how you learn it. Look at them, make a decision, and then call them so you can learn something from them.
The last thing, or I mean, one thing I wanted to bring up was everyone tries to look at MRI ordering kind of from a utilitarian point of view. There's a propensity to see it in a dollar cents and length of stay point of view, but what's not incorporated into that is patient satisfaction. And I forget which article, but one of the articles actually commented that increasing length of stay correlates with decreased patient satisfaction. I don't know if I agree with that, and I'll tell you why. If a patient's coming in and you tell them, now you have to communicate with the patient, but if you tell them, you have the option of being admitted to the hospital because I don't know what's going on, but I think you're worthy of an admission, and they can do this and this test in the hospital. You'll be here for at least another 24 hours. Or you can stay in the emergency department for another 2 hours, maybe 3 hours. I can get that answer for you that quickly. Your day's already screwed. Might as well, you know, stay here. They are happy to take that longer length of stay. Patients happier. They get answers quicker. And, you know, from a patient perspective, I know that if it were me or my family member, they would appreciate having that diagnostic certainty. And again, that's, you know, maybe not, shouldn't necessarily be our goal, but from a patient satisfaction standpoint, I think they see. You know, we live in a society with technological advances and instant gratification, and then they come to the emergency department and they know we have an MRI, and we say clinically, I think, you know, you got something going on. I don't know what it is. I'm going to go ahead and admit you, and we're going to practice medicine, you know, like Osler did, and you know, see if we can, you know, rearrange your humors and figure out what's wrong. And so I see more and more patients coming to me and saying, well, why don't you just get an MRI if that'll give you the answer?
So I think you bring up an excellent point of if radiology says recommend emergent MRI, you order the MRI if you feel that that is clinically indicated. And then you go tell the patient, hey, here's where we're at right now. We really think you need an MRI to look at this. That's going to tack on more time to your stay. But if you click the box, order the MRI, and never check in with them, that makes me angry too. Yeah. That would make me angry as a patient. Or if MRI takes a while because somebody, you know, maybe walked in with an IV pole or something, not that that would ever happen, and breaks your MRI, and they say, well, now we're down to one, you go tell them, hey, you know, this is what's going on. And I've had patients say, look, I'm not waiting for this. I'm just ready to go. Okay, well, I understand. And, you know, come back if you feel worse. But go and tell, you know, your primary doctor what we were concerned about. Get an MRI. That's fine. I'm not waiting here any longer. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. That's totally reasonable for the patient to get to decide to do, as long as they know what their options are and you've included them in the discussion. If you make decisions independently of them, yeah, I'm going to be upset too if you don't fill me in.
Well, I think this length of stay is kind of, you know, what's your price, right? We all have a price at which we're willing to do something. So if we had, and Jared alluded in our last session about MRI, it's time and money, right? So if you could get that MRI done in an hour, mm-hmm. length and the read within 30 minutes later, the length of stay issue would never be a question. And so I think it's a balance, right? Every patient has a set time that they're kind of fed up of being in the ER. Mm-hmm. Some people, it's an hour. They want out in an hour. Yeah. And some people are like, I'll be here 20 days. I'm cool. You know, mm-hmm. give me another sandwich. I'm fine. So I think the dissatisfier comes in is when that time, whatever their time constraint, is passed, which a lot of people, it's after a few hours. When you start to get to about 4 to 6 hours, yeah. most patients aren't happy being there. You know, they usually want something done, or they want to go or make a decision.
The excitement of being in the emergency department has died down.
It's worn off.
I see it about 4 to 6 hours into our resident shifts as well. The excitement of being in the ER has kind of dwindled a bit. When do I get to go home?
I mean, if the time time was less, I think that the evidence would show that it's going the other way. But I think with MRIs and how we still are, and even the best places, I still don't think they're going from patient seen to MRI resulted less than 4 hours. You know what I mean? And I think that's where...
For neurology it is, but for the other MRs it's not.
Correct. And in neurology, because we've put an emphasis in saying it's a code stroke, so I think that's a different... Yeah. If we prioritize something, that bumps Jared's MRI and his ICU and other people like that and everyone else in the ER. And so just like trauma does that, right? We get so frustrated and trauma bumps our CT scanner. So it's a balance, right? The length of stay issue, you know, if it was faster, it'd be great. But it's unfortunately, we're not there yet.
You know, you can see so much more on a CT of a chest or an abdomen than you can an X-ray.
Yeah.
Right. And
that's a true statement.
So when CT started coming out, people were like, man, we can do so much better diagnostic imaging with CT than X-ray. But it's slow and it takes a long time and it's kind of expensive. So you know what? Maybe we need 8 CT scanners that are 64 slice instead of 4 slice. And we're going to hire all these more techs and the price is going to come down because we're going to negotiate better prices with the insurance. And now CT is super fast. You can get it. 15 minutes, get a read in 30 minutes. So my question to the radiologist is an MRI like CT was to X-ray? Can you see so much more that we should be doing it, in which case maybe we need 8 MRIs, mm-hmm. 8 MRI scanners?
That sounds like an excellent question for our peer review.
Or is it, can you see what you already saw in CT, you can just see it better?
Right.
In which case, maybe we need to rein in our MRI usage.
Where are you on the curve, right? How much more are you getting for that?
And is the curve the same? I love that question. It's actually one I was having a discussion with a bunch of residents, med students, and a couple attendings the other day over a campfire. And we were talking about MRI use and costs and why over the past decade or two decades of just proliferation of MRI use, we don't see costs really going down like we thought they would. And, you know, maybe the reason is that we haven't had, quantum leaps in quality and type of MRI like we did with CTs when they were, each iteration was getting twice as good as the one before. Maybe that's why. Or maybe it's because hospitals aren't buying 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 MRIs like they were with CT scanners. Maybe that's it. But the costs, I don't see these market pressures having an effect on MRI like we saw it with CT. And I want to know why. Is there a policy reason why? Or is there a technological reason why? Is this a market reason? Or is this an artificial?
You know, we've got open CT scanners that you can fit into a room about the size of my office, which is not that big. But with MRI, there's a lot more space, there's a lot more buffering, there's a lot of protection you have to take so that no one walks an IV pole into your MRI scanner and shuts it down, you know? And the technology for MRI is definitely getting better as well. And I wonder if one of the reasons why CT got cheaper is because MRI started getting better and the focus shift. But I also think that MRI has enough benefits. It's less radiating. You generally will see more. You can see the things on MRI that you can't see on CT. And it's a one-stop imaging modality, so it seems. If we have bedside ultrasound and an MRI, I mean, why do a CT for a lot of these?
I mean, if it's that much better, we should get so many MRI machines that time moves a little bit slower because the gravitational field in the ED is...
I think certain things still... Bony images are better, so you're looking for orthopedic stuff. CT will still be better on most accounts than MRI, even though we still will do an MRI for an occult scaphoid or occult hip fracture. But CT still is pretty good for those.
To kind of channel Jeff Goldblum from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
So, yeah, the other point I was going to make was we talk about pros of MRI. There are some negative points, and there are harms with MRI, right? When you give contrast to someone, gadolinium, and they've had their 15th, 16th, 20th MRI, it starts to add up, right? So to say that it is a non-harm imaging modality, I think is false. I think it's less because we worry about the radiation of CT. But when you're giving contrast to someone, that's not always a benign thing. There will eventually be a harm to somebody. You can't just give it over and over and over again. Now, you know, you can say, well, they do that in CT anyway. Yeah, but to say one of your differentiating points is you're saying it's a safer modality. So I think that radiation question is out there, and we kind of know with that, but we don't really know, right? No one really knows radiation. We think it's worse, and the younger you are and you get more radiation, probably worse on those two effects. But does it matter for an 80-year-old or a 50-year-old without radiation? Who knows? It's all extrapolated data.
And a lot of the MRIs we're getting away from contrast. Even the MRI appendicitis that we're doing is a non-contrasted study.
Which is better, yeah.
Which is fantastic. The patients don't even need an IV unless they're getting the screening labs. It helps us to figure out what else is going on. So it definitely, we are in the direction, and Jared, I think you made this point, we're going in the direction of where MRI is becoming more and more ubiquitous, it's more easily accessible, it seems to be a better test. Are we going to be on the forefront of this? Do you want to be the first ones to make the change, or do you want to be the last ones to make the change? So it remains to be seen at what point this shift is going to happen and where we're going to be on that curve. Our radiologist here published a great review and meta-analysis about MRI looking for appendicitis, and it's fantastic. And for me in the emergency department, if I could CT you or I could MRI you, I guarantee you I'm going to MRI you to spare you the radiation in a little kid.
You remember when high-def TV first came out? And it was like, oh my God, I mean, the colors are better, the image is so much better, it's so much clearer, clearly better than regular definition TV. So my question is MRI HD TV, or is it 4K where you're like, yeah, it's nice, but not that much better?
HD also, if you remember, made it a lot harder on the actors and actresses because all of those imperfections were seen. So are we making it harder on our radiologists because it seems like we've given them a lot to chew on right now?
Right, and even if the clarity is better, does it change what we're doing? That's the follow-on that we have to address to ourselves too, because I can still watch the program, I can still watch the game, I can see the baseball seams better, but does that help me?
Right, that's why I'm kind of excited to hear the peer review of this. I want to know the answer to these questions. You tell us.
Well, we got to convince him to do it first. So he may listen to this and go, nah, forget it.
My name is Tamara Laney, and I am a board-certified radiologist. I did my radiology training at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. Subsequently, after completing my radiology residency, I decided that I wanted to go back into clinical medicine. And as a result, I ended up doing my internal medicine residency here at the University of Arizona. And I am currently a pulmonary critical care fellow here at the University of Arizona. I was asked to review this podcast by Drs. Mosier and Dr. Leach. And, you know, I'm going to start off by saying that I really enjoyed listening to the thoughts of our emergency room colleagues on the utility of MRI in the emergency room. You know, just to start out and give you guys some background, when I first came here to this institution to do my clinical training in medicine and pulmonary critical care, I was shocked at the amount of MRI that was actually requested in this institution as a whole, and specifically the amount of MRI that was being ordered in the emergency room for things that I thought were not necessarily worthy of MRI in terms of diagnostic differentiation with regards to imaging. You know, overall, I felt the commentary was very insightful. And, you know, just to kind of give you guys a little background, when you train as a radiologist, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, you're taught is that the emergency room is your mortal enemy.
So I apologize for breaking in here, but I had to, just for this once, to say, I freaking knew it.
And that really kind of derives from the fact that the vast majority of the studies that are ordered, you know, end up coming from the emergency room, especially when you're on call at night, which is probably the most difficult time to be a radiologist. And, you know, to listen to the insights of the, you know, the various attendings that were talking about this, I was really, you know, impressed with the amount of insight that they had regarding, you know, the utility of imaging,
when to use it and when to be appropriate in not ordering certain things. And it made me, you know, very, very appreciative that they were putting a lot of thought, you know, prior to ordering a lot of these studies. You know, MRI, you know, when I trained, was not a study that I would really associate with emergency medicine. In my mind, emergency medical imaging has to have certain characteristics. And, you know, of those characteristics, I think the most important ones are going to be the speed at which the study can be done. The faster the study can be done, the more utility it has in the emergency room regarding these patients that present with these undifferentiated conditions that could potentially be life-threatening. The more time you spend trying to diagnose it, the more difficult and dangerous it can be to the patient. You know, and that comes to like the second kind of big thing in terms of imaging in the emergency room that I think is important in terms of the qualities of the imaging, and it has to be safe. You know, sending someone to the MRI scanner, in my mind, can be a kind of a very questionable thing to do. You know, someone told me once when I was training in my radiology residency that if you are not comfortable with sending your patient to the bus stop for 45 minutes, you better not send them to get an MRI for 45 minutes. And that kind of comes down to the fact that, you know, people in the MRI suite have no clinical training or insight. And if your patient decompensates there, you're in deep trouble. And especially the patient's in deep trouble. That's probably the more important aspect to understand there. In terms of designing of MRI scanners and stuff like that, I will challenge you to find a setup where they put an MRI right next to the emergency room. You know, MRI imaging can be very dangerous in the sense that if the MRI scanner fails, that can have to lead to an evacuation of the building. And I think the vast majority of hospitals will never put an MRI next to their emergency room where there is specifically a lot of people that can be challenged by having an MRI that doesn't necessarily work. Or malfunctions. So again, there always is a field trip involved with taking an MRI. So I think that's something that we need to kind of consider. Is MRI an appropriate imaging tool in the ED? Honestly, not often. And then I think one of the last things, one of the bigger concepts that I kind of noticed when you guys were talking about MRI and the ED was these kind of diagnostic dilemmas that you are put into. And, you know, specifically the concept of like the incidental OMA. You know, incidental OMAs are kind of paralyzing from both the the radiologist perspective as well as the clinical perspective. You know, these things that you unfortunately see when you do an MRI of, you know, whatever body part, you know, a lot of those things may not even have clinical relevance, but you're kind of stuck with them and you're left to kind of figure out exactly how to manage these things. You know, and from a radiologist perspective, I think, you know, one of the worst nightmares is you pull up a study for a specific indication and you end up finding like four or five other things that, you know, could, you know, be important or, you know, could be completely useless. But at the end of the day, you know, I think a lot of them are confounding. And usually there's an idea that, you know, do I have to make a big deal about this? Is there going to be medical legal, you know, implications from me not talking about this X, Y, or Z lesion? And, you know, oftentimes I think when a radiologist is reading an MR where you're finding all of these things, it takes a longer time for these studies to turn around because the radiologist sits there scratching their head going, you know, what do I say? I don't want to do any harm to the patient by making a big deal about this, but at the same time, I don't want to, you know, miss a pathology that could potentially be, you know, what the clinician wants me to talk about. So, you know, with MR, you know, those are the things that you kind of deal with a lot. And, you know, if anyone's ever looked at an MR, you know, from, you know, in terms of, you know, ordering it and then flipping through the sequences, you'll notice that there's like 20 different sequences as opposed to maybe, you know, three sequences on the CT. And each one of those sequences is going to show you something that, you know, it could potentially show you something that you don't want to see. And, you know, to scroll through 20 sequences and then wait for, you know, and then to generate a report is going to have a longer turnaround time and definitely something that's going to be not, you know, ideal in the emergency setting. So, but you know, the one thing that I was impressed by when you guys were just talking about your views on MR was kind of the protocols that were recommended in terms of what studies, what situations are appropriate in terms of ordering MR as provided by the University of Arizona Department of Radiology. And you know, the algorithm by which you eventually get to request an MR, I thought was kind of eloquently laid out. And, you know, those indications that they made kind of at the end of the algorithm with regards to how to order or when to order MR, I thought were actually pretty appropriate. You know, my school of thought was, if you are in the ED and you do a specific study, usually CT being your workhorse, where you find a lesion that could potentially involve the neuroaxis, I think that was probably the one indication when I trained as a radiologist where if they called me to say, hey, I need a MR of the brain or spine for concern for a stroke or, you know, a cord lesion, that was an automatic MR. There was no fighting it. You just did it. The body imaging that comes out of the ED, I think, is kind of an evolving paradigm. And, you know, I think as MR gets a little bit faster, a little bit safer, you know, to do MR for body imaging, it could potentially have a lot of benefit, especially in the younger individuals who are, you know, going to be more prone to having complications from, you know, radiation exposure. So I can see the kind of the utility of using it in those situations where you don't want to expose, you know, young people and pregnant ladies to unnecessary radiation. So again, not something that's commonly done in most, you know, emergency settings, but I can understand the rationale from the perspective of our radiology department, why they would have those specific stipulations on those studies that they'd want MR to be done. You know, kind of the last thing I just want to make some commentary about, and it was more a matter about of how many studies are ordered from our emergency room. And I kind of alluded to this at the beginning of my commentary here, but, you know, I'm going to just give an example. You know, I've worked at a few hospitals here in Tucson, and, you know, I think one of our comparable hospitals that we, you know, I'm not going to say compete with, but often share patients with, you know, the one thing that I was really impressed at is that they rarely do MR, but the quality and the insight of the radiology reads of the other common modalities, radiography, ultrasound, and CT, is much, in my opinion, much more insightful and much more helpful to the clinician. And, you know, that comes with the idea of, are you as the radiologist comfortable with the modality that you are reading? And do you have experience enough to be committal to differential diagnoses, and specifically a very limited focus differential diagnosis that has clinical, you know, applicability to the situation? And, you know, I think those individuals who work with non-MR modalities in the MR, and they work with them for a long period of time, become very good at giving you very useful diagnoses. And, you know, one of the things that I think I've noticed about our radiology department is the vast majority of these people have been trained, especially body imagers, to say that, you know what, I'm not comfortable committing to a diagnosis unless I have an MR to back me up. And I think a lot of those recommendations about, you know, MR would be helpful for X, Y, or Z, or to clarify, or whatever, comes from, you know, kind of a background of saying that I'm not really comfortable making a diagnosis because I wasn't trained to make a diagnosis on these other standard modalities. And I think that's something that we are seeing here at this institution, and I think it's more unique to this institution than people would really understand, you know. I think that when you go or leave this institution, whether you're a trainee here or you're an attending and you're going to go to some other institution, if you try to, you know, use MR like we use it here, you're going to get a lot of backlash. And I think you'd be surprised at the quality of the interpretations that radiologists can give you on the non-MR modalities. So, you know, not to say that MR is a bad modality in general. I just think it has a long way to go before it becomes a common powerhouse or workhorse of the ED. So, away from that, guys, I mean, I don't really have a lot more to add. I can just say that overall, I was, you know, very pleased with the thought process that goes into, you know, requesting MR and kind of the insightfulness of, you know, how you guys perceive imaging in general. It made me, I was very entertained by it, and I was really pleased that you guys really put a lot of thought and effort into, you know, what you guys request from the ED, and you know, gave me a lot more respect for your profession and, you know, the stress and the tough decisions you guys have to make. And, you know, I think overall I was, I look forward to working with you guys in the future. And if you guys have any questions, you know, feel free to call me and we can, kind of help make these decisions a little bit more easy. Okay. Thank you guys. Have a good one.